Wolverine. Wolverine.
Hello and welcome to the Examination Podcast. We are super excited to enter the final rounds of contests as we wrap up the Ten of Swords matches. We have Cable number 6 this week, Hellions number 6, and X-Force number 14 as part of the Ten of Swords crossover, as well as the miniseries Juggernaut. Super excited to be here. Super excited to be reading these comics. And even D-Cell won't slow down this podcast. My name is Quentin Immler, and I'm joined this week by Dane Rainier.
Sick D-Cell reference.
And Kelsey Strutz.
Hello.
All right.
I got nothing. Yeah, I got the reference.
You know, you can't win them all, and especially if you're from Krakoa. So we'll just keep going along and hop into the news this week. We got 4 books, so we're going to go pretty fast. But the biggest news piece in the X-Men world for most people is that New Mutants came out digitally this week.
I have yet to watch Dane, that.
Dane had time to see it. You did not, Kelsey?
Yeah, I haven't watched. What's it on?
It's online, and I'm
like
sure
Amazon,
I can get it.
Amazon Prime. I might just rent it.
I think I can hook you up. I'll come over.
I'll give them a couple dollars.
Oh, you do that. You help them.
I'm a nice guy.
Let's hop into it. Dane, New Mutants. What's your read?
Yeah, it was good. I don't know if it was because I came in with extremely low expectations from everything that I've heard, and it obviously wasn't like, you know, a blockbuster hit or anything, but it was a fine movie. I enjoyed it.
I have a question. Cause this is what, from the previews and everything and everyone's complaints about it, my thoughts and what I thought before the complaints came out was X-Men CW.
Very much so.
Yeah. I'd agree with that.
Any criticisms I have, that is what it is.
Yeah.
I think Dane's right on that. This came out at a time and with a cast that is very similar to the ones we got in the Hickman New Mutants book, which I know there was another writer with, but those issues that Hickman was a part of was this New Mutants lineup. And they feel characterization-wise, correct me if I'm wrong, Dane, like straight from the pages.
Yeah, and even to some extent, because I wasn't like a big New Mutants fan at their origin or anything, I've only sort of recently kind of jumped into enjoying them. It felt right to me. Like, this felt like younger versions of those characters.
And when was this was filmed a while ago. Like, it took forever to actually release this movie.
Well, that kind of shows in the movie. It definitely feels like it was supposed to come out at the same time as Logan. It has even footage from the movie Logan in it.
Yeah.
And it ties in with some of the plot elements of that. I'll let you watch it before we spoiler the heck out of it. But I'll say it's a fine movie. I'm not going to say it was like good, like great, but like with the level we hosted X-Men podcast, like it didn't do wrong by the characters. Yeah. And I can't argue that.
It was, average to, I guess, based off of your preference, you might go plus or minus a little bit on that.
Where does it rate against like Apocalypse or Dark Phoenix?
I think it's above the worst X-Men movies, but doesn't touch the good ones.
Okay, well,
I'm probably a little higher on it than Quentin, but that's probably about right. If it's an X-Men movie that you've looked at and said that was bad, it's probably better than that. If you've looked at an X-Men movie and said this was fine, it's probably a little bit below that.
Okay. Sounds good.
Anna Taylor-Joy also steals the movie.
I love her as an actress. She is good.
A fun hour and a half and kind of a unique, I know it's, you know, old, but kind of a unique twist on the superhero genre right now, because everything is the big kind of stock formulaic action summer blockbuster. And this was really kind of more of a horror movie that had X-Men characters. So I enjoyed that.
Dane, I played it and almost wished it was a video game, like an RPG where you like explore the facility and recruit. Yeah. Other New Mutants,
I feel like it would have
been a cool game.
Yeah, for the opportunity for the horror genre to be explored. But, I mean, that is something that's kind of neat about the movie, is that it's, I know it's a team movie, but it's, overall, the movie's a pretty small cast. It's basically 6 people, 1 setting, and that's, you know, the whole movie of an hour and a half.
Yeah, those are my final thoughts kind of on New Mutants. moving on in the news, we're going to talk about some comic book news. After all, we are a comic-centric podcast. And the main one I want to do is, let's talk Franklin Richards, longtime mutant since all the way back in the early 90s, maybe even before that, let's be real. But I just remember they did that Heroes Reborn story arc where Franklin remade the world and his image. And like, Franklin's been a mutant as long as I've been reading comics. And they did it again, similar to what they did with Moira, where they took a character who has always been a human and just changed her. So I want to be fair. I love House of X. And if it's good, it works. Like, I don't want to just crap on this news completely. But they pulled the same move they did with Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver. And they've declared that Franklin no longer a mutant. I didn't read this book. I did read a few panels that were released in an IGN article. So I want to be fair. But Fantastic Four 26 appears to have retconned Franklin Richards to make him not a mutant. Does this grind your gears? Is it a writer's freedom to use? Could this be done better? Kelsey, what do you think?
Well, I was so not thrilled with Fantastic Four and X-Men crossover that them making him not a mutant really doesn't displease me at all, mainly because I don't have to see them try doing that again.
It does make me feel worse about the money we spent on these books, though. That it's like, I just popped a crossover.
Well, it also makes me think to myself, I go, why did you even bother doing these books if you were just going to not make him a mutant? So you're telling me that they have no more reason to have a relationship. This was just an excuse to put Fantastic Four books in here. It seemed pointless. Like, why even change it from not being a mutant? I mean, what does that even affect, making him not a mutant? I mean, it makes no sense. That's all I can say. I mean, I got the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver one because that was purely the offices in Marvel making a switch for the movies,
almost for legal purposes too.
Yeah, that was just for licenses. Correct. Right.
Dane, is your read some of the Kelsey's where you view this as taken away from it, or do you think maybe is this how it should be?
No, I think I'm even going to go a step further than Kelsey. This is ridiculous. Why? I mean, it either shows an absolutely terrible sense of planning from Marvel, because you went out of your way to write a special series that now basically means nothing, what, less than a year later, basically. And it feels bad. One of the cool things about comics is, you know, sometimes when these teams that don't always interact do, when they have reasons and a common thread and they live in the same universe, and these writers have different toys to pull from, to use, and, you know, their toolbox or whatever.
And it's exactly it. It's like when you have a friend over and they have different action figures than you.
Right.
And you find a way to make them play.
Yeah, and you get to play together, and then it's just, now you're basically, for no reason as far as I can tell, unless there's some great and interesting story that's going to come out of this, but I doubt it, because I feel like we've seen stuff like this before. You're just saying, no, we're going to get rid of one of those. Take it away. It doesn't add to anything. It doesn't create new opportunities. It's just severing them. And I don't know why you would do that, why you would write a story, especially from the panels that we have seen, are very, it's not even interesting. It didn't come about in a clever way. It was just literally a retcon. Like, Professor X just sort of shows up and expositions saying, well, you were young and your reality warping powers, you subconsciously made yourself a mutant, but you're not. So it wasn't like something
and
happened.
I hate you, and you're right. Never welcome.
And you're never welcome back. Yeah. And so it's just, he didn't go through something. There wasn't an event that changed him.
Give me your gun and badge, Franklin. You're right? Off the floor.
Nothing was interesting. It was just the declaration that it doesn't count.
Yeah, I agree. And I felt the same way when Scarlet Witch happened. And I got to say, like, it kind of feels weird. Like, on one hand, I don't believe in, like, criticize, like, don't lose your crap over a book doing something you don't like. It's a writer's prerogative. Let them do their interesting thing. But I'll tell you this, like, for me, I remember playing X-Men Legends 2 and Scarlet Witch was on my X-Men team. And the fact that like all that's a lie now is kind of like weird to me. And I feel like this takes away from some of the experiences I've had.
It's funny comparing the two because I have much more of a connection to the characters of Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver than I do of Franklin Richards. But like Kelsey said, it's almost, I don't know, somehow better or more understandable knowing that they did it for the meta legal reasons of wanting to distance it from a product they weren't making the movies for at the time, especially with how big of a character Scarlet Witch was becoming.
But well, I mean,
this one doesn't make any sense. Like, 'cause like, it's not like it just came out of the blue. They actively wrote a story centered around Franklin Richards and him being a mutant and then decided to flush it. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, and we brought up the point earlier in a conversation that Sinister genetically altered himself to be a mutant. Why is he allowed on Krakoa, but not Franklin, who has cosmically genetically altered himself?
That is a fair point. I mean, did Franklin in this new issue go back and say, well, I'm not a mutant, and then cosmically alter himself again?
No, I mean, from what I can tell from the panels, it's just Xavier telling him he did it. Like, Franklin doesn't even know that he did it. And it's like, did Franklin undo it and not know? And again, we haven't read it, so maybe some of this gets covered, but for some reason I have a sneaking suspicion it doesn't. But it also brings up the question, what does it mean to be a mutant? Because if he altered reality to the point that he had an X gene, kind of seems like he's a mutant.
Yeah. Maybe Scarlet Witch will fix it in House of M too.
Yeah. I was about to say, no more mutants, and then all more mutants.
Well, let's go ahead and cut the news here because we got some issues to get into. This week, we're going to take a little diversion, a little juggernaut charge away from Ten of Swords and discuss the newest issue of Juggernaut.
Juggernaut faces trial for the New York City damage he caused from a Spider-Man-based scrap, while D-Cell, of course, streams the whole thing. Justice is interrupted, though, by an attack from Quicksand that Juggernaut and D-Cell thwart, allowing the collateral damage team to discover that she was being mind-controlled by Arnim Zola. Woven throughout the story, we learn more of Kane Marco's past and how it was that he came to obtain the new armor by traveling to the mountains of North Korea and taking the Crimson Bands of Sidorak from a reclusive smith who had been scavenging for the supplies to forge it for himself.
Yeah, I didn't care so much to know why he's the Juggernaut again, why his armor's different. Like, it didn't matter to me. And I feel like it still doesn't matter, yet I wound up enjoying this story. Kelsey, did you feel the same way?
Yeah, this is kind of... It's been the same with each of them, where they're episodic. They're obviously building to something. Like, each one progressively gets him deeper into it, and it's just executed very, very well. The back and forth between D-Cell and Juggernaut attempting to atone in different ways. I mean, the fact that he's brought up on a trial and he goes to it. I mean, he goes to the lawsuit to you know, hear it out.
And doesn't smash anything, just to listen.
Yeah, it's honestly, it... Looking at it, I'm looking at it going, it's like, this could be a TV show. You could put this on TV and just be like, okay, episode one, here we go. Episode two, now we've sort of thoroughly gotten into it. Episode three, now we're starting to figure out what's going on. All right, we're, you know, it has
thing
that.
You. Thank you for making me want John Cena Juggernaut TV
it's
show.
It's not doing anything where it's like, you know, rewriting anything, but it's executing everything to such a high degree.
It's an overly executed simple concept.
Yeah.
But it's so makes for a good comic. Even this one was maybe like I don't want to say the worst of the three because that makes it sound like it was bad, but it was maybe the most average of the three, but even it was good. And it just follows a very simple concept. Where is Kane Marco in this journey and how is he going to progress forward? And then you have a B storyline of what happened and how did he get here. And you're right. How he got the armor is pretty irrelevant. It's just showing, you know, the drive that he had to get back to being the Juggernaut. And that's really what's more important. It doesn't matter that he stole them from some recluse in the mountains. It's that he was willing to go that distance to do it.
Another great issue. John Cena, Marvel, whoever hears this first, call me. We'll figure it out. We'll get together on this.
You have your people call our people. We'll call their people.
Yeah, exactly. Go ahead. Let's jump into the next issue. Now we're going to start swinging them swords with X-Force number 14, Kelsey.
X-Force number 14. Now we're getting into the nitty-gritty of the battles. Saturn 9 has once again drawn more cards because this tarot deck doesn't seem to end. Fights begin. Magic facing on Pogger Pog again. Figures out that apparently Pogger Pog has a little Pog inside of him and removes Pog from his Pog.
Pog.
Following that, there is a multitude of contests where Araco just begins to pile dirt onto Krakoa further and further. Some of the standouts are an eating contest, a dancing contest, a model fashion show, even putting a puzzle together. After that, a race happens in the Crooked Market between Captain Britain or Avalon, depending on who you're talking to, and Root. During the race, apparently Root, by the way, is extremely slow, like just a power walker, I guess. But Captain Britain, Avalon, I need to start calling him Avalon, sorry, is attacked by weird shadow robots. Do you guys know what these are?
Do you guys know what these are? Are they supposed to be the things from Cable?
I have no idea.
I was wondering if they're from that realm that's all shadows and no one knows anything about them.
But they're very.
Well, I was thinking that, and I think they're the things from Cable.
Those aliens? Maybe. I'd have to go back and look
at
it.
Oh, yeah. Those ones that just come through and are like just constantly trying to assimilate and just like code everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Perchance. Anyways, I believe Root is able to cross the finish line, gaining a point, but is then placed in a bottle because she broke a priceless thing that was precariously perched somewhere. Captain Avalon also apparently owes a lot of money for the damage he caused in the race. Side note is a note. Mojo is apparently keeping an eye on what's going on in Otherworld and seeing what could be done with this. They continue along a different assortment of contests. Some that stand out is the one between the White Sword and Logan. I thought that was a good one. The battle between Storm and Death, ending with kind of a Greek style reflecting the Medusa's stare back at him ending. And then that is it. But it's a good way to end it with Storm showing that she can win without her powers.
And a hangover, kind of like Wolverine.
Wolverine's hangover was gone, though, because he was eventually able to expunge the Blight Swill.
Yeah. I thought this was like, I'm trying to think of how to describe it. This story was like an issue that went fast, and it was like, why didn't you go this fast with the rest of them? Because I've been rather bored with the other issues.
You know, here's the thing, though. Yeah, it feels like it goes fast, but a good half of this is meaningless drivel. Some of these contests are absolutely asinine. Like, why the contestants aren't just going, what are we doing here? Why don't we just join together and remove it? Eating contest, escape from sea monsters, pushing rocks up a hill.
You forgot the best one. Kitten killing.
Yeah, kitten killing. There's, I mean, kill this kitten. It's silly the first time, but then they keep doing it, and you're just going, "Who is it? Did a child just sit there and go, yep, I'm just going to put him through all these hoops. Like, a Saturday night literally just – I'm just going to throw multiple things at her. The only things that matter are these contests. The contests is when they kill each other. So, yeah, this one will be fun in between.
I wonder what her motive is, because at this point she seems, like you said, like a child, or like maybe there's something wrong with her. Like, I don't know, Mice and Men's coming to mind.
My thing about looking at it is I don't mind that these competitions are happening, because whatever the motive behind Saturnine is, okay, we get there and it makes sense or we don't, but we can't really judge that right now. I understand that Saturnine is just doing whatever she wants. And if she wants to humiliate these people with dumb contests, she's going to do it. What I don't like is the tonality of it, because it just, the juxtaposition doesn't work. And I don't like that in the story that it's happening, this doesn't feel the way these characters would be reacting. Again, I know I keep harping on this, but the fate of their world hangs in the balance. And they're totally fine with doing a puzzle competition.
Right. Like, okay, like the one I brought up, the one between the White Sword and Wolverine, where they're just staring at the mirrors. I thought that was great. Where it's like guys who have both, you know, killed a bunch of people, who basically is going to regret this?
Regret? But one has a self-righteous point of view and the other one has regret. And that's, it was powerful. Right.
That's an extremely powerful character moment. I mean, that is telling a whole story in four panels.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That was, and then it just felt so cheapened for it to share a four panel page with
magic's
inability to spell the word magic.
Or that her ego is just so big where she's like, I know how to actually spell it. I'm going to do it wrong because I don't care.
You have maybe one of the most emotionally poignant moments we've had in all of Hickman's X-Men, done so well in just four panels, and then you put it across the page from a joke. I get that. I think they're trying to bring some of the levity that makes the MCU succeed, but the tone and the timing of it, it's taking away from what the story should be about, what we've been prepped for, what we want as a reader.
Also,
yeah, and I think if the Wolverine stuff earlier worked better from Marauders, it would have been okay. Like maybe it's like, where's the panel where Wolverine goes, guys, I've seen how it works out when we don't play the games. This sucks. And I know, but you got to go along with it or things are going to be really bad. Like, they don't even take the time to do that.
Right. Well, yeah. That would at least be something, acknowledging what it is. But instead, it's just another panel of a joke about Gorgon off to have sex with a rock.
Also, in what world do the human, or does Krakoa lose to Arako in the dance contest? I see War and Bay the Blood Moon. I mean, I get it. Wolverine is just standing there.
Wolverine just doesn't appear to participate.
Yeah, but Cypher is really getting down. I think that should really mean something here.
He speaks the language of dance.
He does speak the language of dance.
Here's something else I wanted to bring up about this issue before we move on, is that did anyone get deja vu from the Storm fight with Death? Because I feel like there was an issue of Marauders not that long ago where she specifically says, I don't need my powers to be powerful, and stabs somebody with a knife.
Yeah.
So that
isn't that when she gets in the fight in the, when she fights Black Panther's sister,
Shuri?
Yeah, when she fights Shuri.
I don't.
When she goes and gets the sword?
I don't know. Maybe it is. It's just, I know. I know recently we've literally seen a scene where Storm uses the same line. And so for it to be so recent in time, it just falls a little flat to me that it's like, okay, well, you said this earlier in something that doesn't really matter as much as you fighting Death. So I get that the idea is showing the strength of Storm, and I like that. But to do it in the same repeated way. And
also, it's not fun when you wharf Death that much.
Right. And when you have to have Storm say it. Like, she doesn't need to literally say the line, I don't need my powers to be strong. You're showing us that she doesn't have the powers and she's still fighting a supernatural entity. She doesn't have to say it out loud.
I actually didn't mind how she killed Death. the little reflection thing. I think that's
that a classic great. Trope.
What I minded was the callous nature that after stabbing him, looking at the vampires and just say, well, he's bleeding, isn't he? And literally, while the guy is not quite dead yet, just lets these supernatural horrors tear him apart.
I don't think he dies.
When but my thing is, they have shared moments with one another. They like civil moments. Like right. he helps.
And her Storm up. Has sworn just, off like, killing.
She's laying there hungover. He could have just walked up and just offed her, and he doesn't.
Yeah, that kind of comes back to the whole thing about the Marauders and the dinner party storyline. Is there some level of cordial respect between these people? Is it a do whatever it takes to win? It's kind of muddled.
Yeah. Well, you know what's not muddled? Hellions number six.
The Hellions continue a hard and tiring road to finally reach Arako to help their friends trapped in the Tournament of Swords. Immediately after stepping foot on Iraqi soil, the group meets Taran the Uncaring and his genetically mutated team, the Locust Vile. The encounter reveals Sinister isn't looking to help the X-Men, but instead to collect otherworld mutant DNA samples. The clash ends with Nanny, Orphan Maker, and Wild Child dead, Havoc losing his hands, Empath running off on his own, and Sinister left in the clutches of Taran. However, Sinister gets his DNA collections into the safe hands of Psylocke as she, John Greycrow, and Havoc escape. The group reunites, with Greycrow stabbing Empath and leaving him in Otherworld. Back on Krakoa, another Sinister ambushes the Hellion survivors, leaving none alive, and then crying out for help as though it were a tragic discovery to him.
I loved this issue.
Hellions is just banger after banger, man.
It's so good. And, dude, I love that Sinister is, like, just a worse version of, like, there's an opposite of him in Arako who, like, seems better than him. Love that. Love that Sinister had a selfish motive for going the whole time. Love how they spaced that out and didn't just give it to us right away, even though it doesn't come as a surprise. Everything about this book was a banger for me.
I love that this could have this has nothing to do with what's going on. Like the Ten of Swords stuff means jack diddly to Sinister, really. I also like that you don't really know if it's that Sinister's plan. It was his clone's plan. Which clone it is that did it. You have no idea what his motives really are from clone to clone. Because they're all bat snot crazy. I didn't want to swear. And the Unforgiving or whatever, what's his name?
Taran the Uncaring.
Taran the Uncaring is Sinister taken to the extreme. Yeah, like he's making grotesques at this point.
He's Sinister taken to the extreme cross with Xavier, because this is yes. like Taran's like cancer versus mirror image of the X-Men.
Yeah, like, and he's not crazy like Sinister is crazy, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, Sinister's, he doesn't have that avoir faire, like the flair that Sinister has. He's more like gritty, like get it done.
Flair
which reflects Arako well.
It's a narcissistic flair that Sinister has.
Yes. But yeah, I really thought, and really, okay, for all the like funny adventure stuff going on with this, the Wild Child sacrificing himself for Psylocke, no, willingly. It's like, oh man.
And I think even more importantly than that, that Psylocke made the decision to do it.
Yes.
And you can, and that's the thing, like that relationship, that's only like 3 or 4 issues old, but they developed it even in this issue, even in parts where there weren't.
Are you saying there's been more character growth in 6 issues of Hellions than 20 issues of Ten of Swords?
I'm saying 3 issues of Hellions. I'm not, because this relationship didn't start until a few issues into Hellions. And they show moments, even where there's no words in this issue, just in the art where you see the way that Wild Child and Psylocke interact.
Yes.
And it builds up and it makes the moment, like you feel that Psylocke didn't want to do that.
Not to spoil Cable, but can we just say it? Hellions won the week for sure.
Yeah. Hellions wins every week. anymore. So.
Yeah.
By not mattering, it matters more for the book. Like Hellions, by disassociating itself, matters the most in a lot of ways. And also at the same time, like, shows, because they're not held into like fitting this larger narrative and having to anchor themselves down, it like honestly kind of showcases the world of Araco better than the other books as well.
I honestly wanted to see more of them traveling through the other places. Like when they show up finally at Araco and they're all kind of beat up and like, guy lost my eye on this bridge today. It's like, well, now I want to know what happened. Yeah, see, I want to know what happened.
Somehow Sinister comes through unscathed from everything and everybody else is just
like, I'll get the next one. I promise. But no, I mean, this book, I think we've said this before, but they get the bottom barrel characters for this book and are basically, in a lot of ways, told your plot can't have any effect on the main storyline that's the driving force. And somehow it's still fantastic.
They're just cracking home runs with it.
It ties up.
Was that a nanny reference?
It ties in enough that it's relevant to what's going on, but is disassociated enough that it doesn't have to have consequences for that to be good. It's making me care about a relationship between a Psylocke that didn't exist a year ago and Wildchild.
Yeah.
Like, why, if this can be done, is everything? I care about Psylocke and Wildchild.
It made me care about a relationship between an egg thing and possibly a robot boy that is basically acid on the inside.
That's the other thing. It pulls off whimsy. Like, take a lesson. Like, these silly contests don't make sense. But, like, there's whimsy in here. Half the issue, you're looking at Nanny's lower torso riding a horse because the top half of it got blown off. Like,
they capture the ability to be funny and serious and thought-provoking, like emotional, in this one issue. That's all, you know, and it works the whole time. It doesn't jolt you from one to the other going, it's like, why did you do that? That doesn't work.
The humor is honest. Like, I get that it's a fantastic setting with fantastic characters in a fantastic scenario, but the reality of it grounds it and allows you to have gritty violence, incredible humor, and then poignant emotional moments all in the weirdest book the X-Men are putting out right now.
And with that said, my final point, I think it even enhances the opening scene of Cable and gives it somehow by coincidence. I feel like this probably wasn't planned at all. It really does a good job of opening the final chapter of Ten of Swords we get this week before what feels like a purposeful three-act finale next week. So let's go ahead and jump into Cable number 6. And so, fresh up the developments of Hellions, Cable 6 starts with the Closed Council being updated on the findings of Sinister from his trip to Araco. Well, at least we get an update that is the narrative Sinister is willing to share. He warns them that none of the sword bearers should be expected to survive what they go through on the other side, and he encourages them to destroy the portal and prepare for invasion. Although Krakoa protests and the council sits and does nothing. And I have to say, based on the next two matches, Sinister's cowardice may just happen to be the best plan, because even Cable, one of the strongest mutants they have, is humbled in contest with Bay the Blood Moon of Araco. Cable, although powerful, learns that even the slightest hesitation can cost you everything. Bay takes advantage of his distraction and concern for his friend, Cypher, and trips him and is almost able to kill him with a killing blow. You know, he gets the card of the fool and it really shows here. But luckily, the same thing that distracted Cable ends up being his salvation as Doug intervenes with his new wife and begs her to show mercy, which she does. At this point, after losing this contest, the score becomes 18-6 in favor of Araco. And it's not looking good for Krakoa. They're very much, you know, outclassed at this point. And a win seems a foregone conclusion for Araco. Cable, humbled by the experience, psychically reaches out to his parents and hints that Jean and Scott are tired of waiting on the sideline and plan to go fix the situation. We'll see that develop next week, hopefully. In the final moments of this week's issue, we get the long-awaited matchup of Gorgon, the war captain of Krakoa, against White Sword in a death match. Gorgon fights valiantly, not only against White Sword himself, but his 100 soldiers. In a true act of bravery and defiance of death itself, Gorgon makes Krakoa proud, and he defeats 13 of White Sword's warriors before finally being taken down. And it's a touching and moving moment for the heroes of Krakoa as he's slayed by White Sword himself. As this battle comes to a close, the score is drastically altered because Gorgon gets a point for each of White Sword's forces, and the score becomes 19-19 after Gorgon's slayed by White Sword. One battle yet remains at the end of this book, and that is Apocalypse versus Genesis. So yeah, that's Cable number 6. Yeah, Vince issue.
This is, again, a love and hate issue for me. The hatred I have, I'm just going to get it out of the way. That final contest between Gorgon and White Sword, it's another one of these, what child is making these rules? Because the way I understand, the White Sword doesn't like send ghost aids. That's not part of his power. He just brought 100 extra guys with him. I mean, it's not even like the Summoner. Summoner summons them. His guys, like, he resurrects them. That's not...
It should be new to you. This is a parallel for the American dream and how you were raised to think that you had a chance.
It's like having the bonus round of, like, get caught up. Like, all the other previous stuff, they're like, meh, it really didn't matter. You're caught up. You're good. But in that same term, we don't talk about this enough, the art. And I think we mentioned with this artist before, the facial expressions are really good. And one of them, the simplest one, I think, is where the part where Cyclops says, "Son, forget all that. Who hurt you?" And Nathan's answer is, "I forget her name, but it was Doug's large wife." And the drawing of Jean's face is great. Like, just the, wait, what? Doug's large wife.
Yeah. This book made me miss my X-Men really bad.
Like, this was had really good points. I liked the fight between Cable and Bay the Blood Moon. You know, Cable's youth showing through, and like you said, where he thinks about what's going to happen to his friend if he does this. You know,
and hesitation costing him the match.
And the thought of, all I ever really wanted is to make my dad proud, you know, like that's all really good. And Gorgon's really good in this. Like, you know, again, my complaint was about this, the way they've done this tournament overall, really. And again, how in the world does he get to bring 100 extra guys with him?
I was desensitized to the randomness of the rules by this point. Right. Dane, did this bother you?
No, I think you're focusing on the wrong thing. And if anything, it means they wrote it correctly. But so here, let me start at the beginning. Let me talk about the Cable fight first. The Cable fight is great because it gives you such an awesome character moment with Cable that, you know, it shows you how strong he is. He can defeat Bay the Blood Moon. He is powerful enough to do it. But he's not the Nathan Summers that we know. He doesn't have the edge. And it's awesome that the thing that stops him from doing it isn't so much the training, or that he's not good enough, or he hasn't learned what our Nathan Summers has learned. It's that he doesn't have that hardness, that callousness that old man Nathan has, that he's still young, that he doesn't want to do this to a friend. And then, again, a really good emotional, real human moment with him breaking down to his parents, and then the same side of things with Jean and Scott reacting, like seeing them as parents have to react to that. And it's a nice little play on, I think, you know, sort of the parental trope that...
Guys, I've got to say it.
What?
I love Dad Clops. I love it. I love it. I love it. It makes him more interesting than just the, you know, Fred from Scooby-Doo character. It makes him
the Boy Scout leader.
Badass. He feels like a badass now. He feels like a cool dad. And Cyclops has always been lame.
Yeah. Yeah. He went from a very lame phase, the lame Boy Scout, to sort of the reluctant hardened leader. And this is a new phase that we've entered in for Cyclops. And it is. It's great. But even just the moment, it's a great moment for the family. It's a great flip, like I said, of the trope, because it's not, you know, the woman getting emotional, the wife or mother getting emotional, and the husband being like, don't worry, honey, we'll fix this. It's Scott breaking down. Like, I have to save my kid. And Jean being the one, clearly the more powerful of the two, being like, we're going to do it. We're going to go get our kid. So that was, again, in a world of otherworld, fantastic tournament fighting, a very human rooted moment. And then the Gorgon fight. Yeah. I mean, what you're saying, Kelsey, this isn't fair, but that's the whole point. And this at least makes sense to me. It's not a dancing contest or a puzzle contest.
That's fair. That's true.
This is what they would do. Why not press the advantage if you know you've got it and using the resources that they have? And then it just serves as such a cool, badass warrior death for Gorgon to not only take them down, but then when the guy who's just clearly overwhelming and outclassing you looks you in the face, not the eyes at this point, obviously, because those aren't there, but looks him down and says, I'm going to kill you. And then I'm going to raise you back in service to me. And Gorgon, knowing that he's dead on his feet, just tells him, no, you're not. You know what? I mean, it shows you who the White Sword is. It shows you who Gorgon is. It gives you a great moment. And then even just the panel with Apocalypse, you know, with the three young X-Men standing next to him when he's like, watch this, kids, because this is how a mutant dies. Like, that was... I mean, that was good. Yeah,
that worked for me.
Oh, yeah. I'm getting goosebumps talking about it now. That was emotion. So there was great emotion throughout this issue of Cable. I was a huge fan of this one. The ending of, okay, it's going to be Apocalypse versus Annihilation or Genesis, whatever. That's a bit like movie cliche. I guess we've got three issues. Something's going to come of it. We don't necessarily know what type of battle it is, what's going to be drawn from the cards or whatever. But... I mean, that the fact that that is the who cares point. They took great moments of poignancy and emotion in this issue. Great writing.
Yeah, I'm with you. And a feeling I had leaving this issue was, is this, are these books, like, you know how they spread it out? Like, I'm wondering if, like, these whimsy issues are the ones that weren't supposed to be there. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was... Was this an actual issue that originally would have been, like, split up? Like, originally when this was pitched, was the whimsy always in there, or was this Mortal Kombat with Marvel characters?
Was the whimsy filler?
Yeah. I don't know. You know, though, I gotta say, yeah, Dane, you convinced me more on the Gorgon thing. Like, the quality of his death, it just surpasses the, you know, the fact that the guy got 100 dudes with him.
And don't get me wrong, when it first happened, when he's like, all right, fighter number one, I was like, oh, come on. But then I thought, that's the point, is that you should feel that as, you know, we're the fans of Krakoa rooting
that's
for him.
True. That's as true. They're, you know, my guys are the defense, and they won't call that holding penalty on the offense.
And it's like you're sitting there thinking, God, this is such a load of crap. You know what I mean? How can this happen? But it's getting that emotional reaction out of you, but then also getting that genuine emotion from the moments with Cable and his parents and from the death of Gorgon.
And I mean, like, let's not, Gorgon's not exactly on anybody's top 10 X-Men list, but no. I'll say they brought back in the day, they're like, he's a war captain. And people are like, I don't even know who that is, whatever. Like, and they've slowly put him in the background of things, whether it's the Apocalypse issue, whether it's the suit war captain issue where they go and talk to leaders. Like, he's had enough cool moments where this didn't feel out of right field. It felt like it felt right. And they gave me just enough time where I care about this character that it really did work for me.
You're right. I've always criticized, like, The Walking Dead, because whenever you watch that show, whenever a B-tier character gets their episode, it's like, well, you know they're going to die within three issues because they just wanted to make us care about them before they did it. And this at least felt a little more genuine, that he was never a main focus, but he was an important part of Krakoa, and they added some of that gravitas to him to make this moment feel.
Yeah. As much as Hellions won the week, I think of as far as moving the story along, this is arguably my new favorite Ten of Swords, you know, as far as like that event goes.
Yeah, this was a great issue. In fact, now the more that I got up on my high horse talking about it, I'm convincing myself to say Cable was the better book. But
I don't know. I mean, I don't know why we're downplaying the fact that Cable still didn't know who he was fighting.
Yeah, I
did not know. It was hilarious. The name of who he was fighting. Hadn't met them, been to dinner. Hell, he was at her wedding. No,
that's true.
It's like just a Doug's large wife beat me up.
I do want to ask.
That's the kind of whimsy I like. That's the kind of like, it's silly, but it's also like, actually, I don't know. Maybe he is so juvenile and egocentric and overconfident.
And things are moving so fast. I can buy that teenage Cable doesn't know that he
but
forgot.
But also the theme of like the scene of him giving the thumbs up at the, you know, when Doug's walking down the aisle.
Yeah. It feels real. It's rooted in a place of reality for these characters in their world. And that's what makes it work. That doesn't make some of the other stuff work. I was going to ask you just real quick though. The notebook entry that logs all of the fights between all the contests or battles between Krakoa and Arako. Do you guys think this was designed?
What about the one that is Karako?
Karako. And it is funny that it's on one that had a switch of Arako Krakoa, so maybe it was a mistake. Maybe
not. I can't figure out if they did it on purpose or not. Go ahead.
But so what I was going to ask is, do you think this was something made for the comic, or do you think this was something Hickman had scribbled in a notebook somewhere to keep track of things, and then at some point somebody glanced over his shoulder and was like, oh, you should like make that up into a real document, we'll throw it into a book.
Well, I mean, I almost wonder at this point in planning, like, I wouldn't be surprised if they had a Google Doc open and literally just copied and pasted this, which would explain the error of
Karaka. It feels like it was something, like I said, that was just that they already had, that they were using this to plan around, and then it was like, oh yeah, this will make a, we could fill a page with this, get that data
sheet. Well, and to be honest, there was so much stupid stuff that I didn't care about that, like, I didn't give him a second glance, and looking at this made it really easy to keep track of all the dumb stuff I read.
Yeah, I think these are the kind of data pages that I like. It's not dense with text or exposition. It's just, okay, here's a quick recap of everything that's been going on in the last 20 contests or whatever it is.
Yeah. Well, you know what I'm going to need? We got over 20 rounds here of this contest. Let's jump into 20 questions, where Kelsey's going to be in the hot seat, putting us through the regimen, seeing if we can survive his little levels on the danger room. So 20 questions, yes or no. First place thing in the Marvel Universe, whenever you're ready, buddy.
God, some part of me really thinks we've already done this one. But let's go. Let's rock and
maybe
roll.
Maybe that will truly dupe us. Is this a character?
Yes.
Did we already guess it?
I don't know. I wish I could tell you. Is that really a question? No.
Well, if that was the case, then it would be... What's his name? Goop is what I was picturing.
Goop.
That was yours, too. What were you?
All right, so let's go. Is this character a mutant?
Yes.
Is this character a villain?
Yes.
I knew Kelsey would go for his villains.
Does this character have a sweet cape?
Yes.
No way. Are there multiple clones of this character on the island of Krakoa?
No.
Okay.
I mean, unless they're hiding them somewhere.
Okay. Was this character featured in any Dawn of X books?
As a character, no. I'm going to say no.
As a character.
Yeah, no.
The character did not appear.
The other way to explain it would just be like a jerk move to throw a wrench in it.
Okay. Here's some typing. Is Dane looking up characters not in Dawn of X? No clones.
Yes. Sweet. How did you know? I've compiled a database. And that's all I have to type in.
I'm just picturing a whole column of cape. Yes, no. For every single.
Don't pull back the curtain for the listeners.
Villains with capes.
Has this character been in the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants?
No.
Okay, so my mind is going to, I'm not sure I want to burn a question, Dan, but is it like an acolyte, I'm wondering? Is that question worthy?
Sure. I think so. Well,
is this character an acolyte?
No.
Okay. Sweet cape, but not an acolyte, man.
I know. I feel like you're...
That knocks out a lot of characters with sweet capes.
they all rock them capes in those acolytes.
That is the other thing. There's cape, yes, no, and then
sweet Marauders cape. Aren't a big cape group. It's not is a lot of capes on the Marauders.
Well, here's a question. If this person is on a team, we could try and limit the team. We don't necessarily know if that's true yet.
Could it be Strife?
Does Strife have a sweet cape? Oh, yeah. It even similar to.
And it's a Cable week. So maybe we should ask if the character is from another timeline or associated with time travel, maybe? Is that too specific?
Is this a character closely tied to Cable?
Yes.
This character have a metal helmet?
Yes.
Is this character a former member of the Mutant Liberation Front?
Yes.
Oh, damn. You're just burning questions. This is Strife.
Yes.
Oh, see, I thought we were just going
to... These jerks don't want me to get the record in the... As a contestant.
I thought we were just going to go through a contest to see how many facts about Strife you and I could put out there before one of us had to submit.
And you're right. Strife got brought up in, like, I think, like conversation, but he was never actually in
right.
The book.
Okay. Would you guys like to do another round? I got my backup one.
And no, I do believe good. Strife was the one I did. For there was a week where the Mutant Liberation Front was featured in New Mutants,
right?
And it was like one of the first Cable issues.
Okay.
And
well, fine.
It's funny that you say he has a sweet cape because I don't know his. He just has like a regular red cape, doesn't he?
Oh my gosh! Well, now we're getting to fashion issues.
No. I don't know why in my head. Maybe it's because his helmet is segmented that it reminds me of Sinister's. Because Sinister's cape is segmented, and for some reason when I thought of Strife, I thought he had like a metallic segmented cape like Sinister's, but now that I'm looking at him, it's just like a red cloak. I don't know why in my head it looked more like Sinister's.
All right, the next round, I'm going to go come in hot and say, is it Eric the Red?
No.
It's firing away.
Damn it. All right, well, that's about all the time we got this week.
Wait, do I have to keep using this one? Or maybe next week it will be Eric the Red.
There you go.
That's up to you.
Well, we've hit the 50-minute mark. It's been a fun episode. I think we'll just stop it here. And see you guys next week for the conclusion of the Ten of Swords storyline. Can't wait.
Looking forward to it.
Take care.
Hello, fellow Danger Room survivors. This is Dane thanking you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. I want to invite you to join the Examination community by checking us out at our website and Twitter. We'd love to hear what you think of the podcast and get your suggestions for Questions of the Week and Marvel 20 Questions. You can find us at examination.blogspot.com and on Twitter at examination. That's examination.blogspot.com and at examination spelled the same way. While you're at it, help us grow the community by giving us an Omega-level review wherever you listen to the podcast. See you next week.